Yes.
All right, thank you. All right, we are back from executive session. We are back in deliberations where we were before we left. I was, as the lead, continue with the, my comments. As I mentioned, I do have concerns that Dr. Wiley was perceived or holding herself out as a psychologist. I don't see any documentation in the progress notes with RJ that anything was mentioned in regards to she was a under supervision. And I also have concerns about engaging in conduct that's unprofessional to the psychologist. It's behaviors such as contacting RJ regarding a potential person to date, the multiple relationships, the texting. Those are some of my concerns with that. Any thoughts from the other board members?
I think in this is Dr. Gill. In addition, I think there's a concern that when Dr. Wiley switched from being a life coach to a psychotherapist, albeit a psychological assistant, that she didn't close down her Facebook, which then confuses the roles that she's playing with respect to this patient.
Thank you. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any comments? If not, I'm going to make a motion.
I agree with all the comments so far.
So I make a motion that we move this case to the board for review with potential violations of 32-2084, holding self out as a psychologist, ARS 2071.0138, engaging in conduct that is unprofessional, specifically as it relates to Arizona Revised Statute 32-2061-16, which is unprofessional conduct, G, which is engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychology services provided to the client and patient. O, providing services that are unsafe or unnecessary, otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional to current standards of practice. R, failing to obtain a client's or patient informed or written consent to release personal or otherwise confidential information to another party, regardless of the release is otherwise authorized, and that was in regards to the information being told to the different parties about each other, potentially. And then also DD, which is the ethical standards adopted by the board, and the ones I felt maybe applicable are 3.05, multiple relationships, and 4.05, disclosure, and 3.10, informed consent. Those are the violations I think we should move forward to the board for review. Is there a second or comments?
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any comments?
This is Dr. Gill. My comment is, with respect to the ethical code, I think 3.10 is informed consent, and I believe 3.11 is informed consent with families. And I think that second code is maybe more appropriate here.
All right, is that a friendly amendment so for me to change it to 3.11? I will.
Indeed it is.
You may also want to keep 3.01. That could go to informed consent and her disclosure or non-disclosure of her status as a supervisor.
Okay, so I actually then, if I may amend, so I will include the 3.10 and then also include 3.11. Is Dr. Davis-Wilson, you seconded it. Will you second that friendly amendment?
Yes, I'll second that.
Okay. All right. So is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the case will move forward to the board. All parties will be contacted by our staff regarding further steps in this process. Thank you. We're going to move to our final complaint, 2037, Dr. Denbar. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead. Would you like to make some comments, introduction comments?
I would. I have just one just point of order question, though, given previous conversations. Do you want me to go over the background first, and then we open it up for, I believe, we have a request for continuance already on the table, or do we want to do that first? I'm not sure which.
I'll ask our attorney for some advice.
Is Dr. Denbar still on the line?
Dr. Denbar, are you on the line, sir?
I am. Yeah, I am. Good morning.
Okay. Dr. Denbar, are you represented by counsel in this matter?
Not. So, I can further explain that if you'd like, but the short answer is no.
Okay, so the matter is called. I was in touch, and I understand from staff that you may be presenting a verbal motion to continue this matter. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, if you want to proceed with that motion before we get into the case summary, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. I present a verbal motion to continue the matter.
Did you want to state any grounds upon which the motion is based?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I had moved my home in early February and had a problem, which I'm able to document, with the mail system of things getting forwarded to my home. The complaint was sent by board staff to my previous home. It was not received by me. I believe that Mr. Beardsley presented to the last meeting, and there was discussion about my about this complaint, which I was not aware of. And then Mr. Beardsley, I believe, I don't recall the exact conversation that happened at that meeting, but there was some sort of allusion that he was going to be representing me. Artie Eves and Mr. Beardsley would be representing me, which is certainly the case. And I had sent an email to my counsel saying I would want them to represent me in that matter. That email apparently got overlooked, and Mr. Eves, in addition, needs to go through a couple of steps to get approved by the bankruptcy court, of which I'm in bankruptcy, to represent me in this matter. So there was a confluence of events that happened that have resulted in me not ever having seen this complaint, nor my attorneys who would like to represent me having seen this complaint. So, which I'm certainly happy to document and turn over the documentation to. So I humbly request a continuance for this case, given the events I described, and apologize for any error that I've caused in this situation.
All right, thank you. Ms. Michelson, did you have a comment?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. I just wanted to provide some clarifying information. At the end of January, the complaint notification letter was sent to Dr. Denbar. On February 3rd, he did email me indicating that he had received a board complaint number 2037 from the board on Saturday. Following this, I did confirm to him that that information was sent from the board. I also had sent him a notice in March regarding today's complaint screening committee. I'd also included Mr. Eves and Mr. Beardsley on that communication as well. At no point did Dr. Denbar ever reach out to me indicating that he had not received it.
All right, thank you. All right, board members.
This is Dr. Denbar. May I have a chance to respond to that?
Briefly, yes.
Okay. So Ms. Michelson did send me an email, and I did respond to it, and that was my error in stating that I had received that complaint. I had not looked at the number closely and accept full responsibility, but I indeed had not received this complaint, 2037. And additionally, also, which I will accept full responsibility for, the email that was sent ended up in my spam folder, and I was alerted by Mr. Eves in a conversation yesterday that I had a complete screening committee essentially today.
Thank you for the clarification. All right, board members, we have a request in front of us. Any comments?
You're breaking up, Madam Chair. Can you say that again?
Yes, we have a request to delay this case from Dr. Denbor. Are there any thoughts from the board regarding this?
Dr. Denbor, is it, and I guess this question is about whether there was any, correspondence sent to your attorney as well. You said that you hadn't received it or the update in a timely manner.
Yeah.
I wonder if your attorney did receive it.
Yeah.
And if so, I guess my question would be why they didn't contact you immediately upon receiving that information.
Ms. Michelson can let you know if
my...
presented that information to his attorney.
Yes, I can clarify. When I did mail and email the complaint screening notice to Dr. Denbor, I did include Mr. Eves and Mr. Beardsley on that communication. And in addition, when the board had a meeting on March 13th to review other cases against Dr. Denbor, during discussion, the board did notate that there was a pending complaint number 20-37 and requested that Mr. Beardsley follow up with Dr. Denbor regarding the status of that complaint. Staff never received a response from Dr. Denbor or Mr. Beardsley on that.
Okay, thank you.
And just to clarify, I never received any information regarding that from Mr. Beardsley, and I'm certainly able to document that. And I don't, Ms. Galvin might be able to speak to this a bit more, but my understanding from Mr. Eves and Mr. Beardsley is that until they are retained as counsel, they are reticent, apparently, to send me information in regards to a certain complaint. And they have not been retained as counsel as for this complaint.
All right. So, board members, what we have is a motion to table this complaint. My feeling is just to move forward with this complaint and to listen to it, look at the grounds of the information we have right now, and make a decision. Thoughts from the board members?
Madam Chair, I have very similar thoughts, and I am not sure if my original thought was potentially to consider executive session for the purpose of legal advice. But it's under the same similar basis of whether or not we should move forward. And I am of the same opinion at this point to go ahead and move forward, knowing this is just the complaint screening. And then obviously, you know, that doesn't forego the ability for the doctor to still, at least my understanding, that doesn't forego the ability for the doctor to still submit the response and all of the other documentation and get legal counsel and everything beyond this, if this so moves beyond the committee.
Ms. Galvin?
Yeah, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I would agree with your perspective on this, in that if you consider this case today and if it is referred to the full board, Dr. Denbor would still have an opportunity to submit a response and to obtain legal counsel.
So I'll make a motion to move forward with the case. Is there a second?
To deny the motion.
I'll make a motion to deny the motion to table this complaint. Is there a second?
I will second that.
We have a motion and
yes,
a second.
Yes, I'll second that.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Is any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Dr. Davis-Wilson, would you provide a summary of the case?
Yes, in January.
This is Dr. Denbor. May I just make a potential ask?
What is that ask?
May I receive a copy of the complaint potentially?
Yeah, we will. We will email you a copy of the complaint. Are we doing that right now? And we're doing that right now. Dr. Davis.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Dr. Davis Wilson, go ahead, please.
Yes. In January of 2020, board staff received a call from CA, an investigator with Aetna Special Investigations Unit. During that call, CA did indicate that Dr. Denbauer's company, Mental Edge Neuropsychology, was a contracted provider with Aetna Insurance, and that Aetna did conduct an investigation into billing practices for Dr. Denbauer after receiving a complaint in 2009 alleging that Dr. Denbauer billed a patient for services that never occurred. The board staff did request that the findings of that investigation be sent to the board staff, which CA was able to provide the case report. The allegations are that Dr. Denbauer is misrepresenting services and billing for services not rendered, that Dr. Denbauer is going to assisted living centers for seminars and meetings with prospective patients, then billing their insurance for visits or phone calls that members claim did not take place or were not conducted in person. One of the Aetna members, the one that sent the complaint to Aetna, advised that she had serious concerns regarding Dr. Denbauer and Dr. Magill, and that the claims were submitted for services that she did not receive. In that letter, she mentions that she only spoke to Dr. Denbauer once over the phone, but had never met him in person. Her visits consisted of going to the retirement community and answering questions from a booklet. Dr. Denbauer was not the provider administering the appointments. Dr. Denbauer only called for one time to discuss the booklet questions and to confirm her name and date of birth. In review of the claims, Aetna did review claims for 4 dates of service. And under the tax ID, there was additional services billed under Dr. Magill and Ms. McLaughlin for an additional Magill was 100 service and McLaughlin was for 7 days. Based on the interview with the Aetna member, she states she did not meet with Dr. Denbauer in person, and all claims submitted by him with the place of service at the assisted living facility were not rendered.
Dr. Davis,
for the review of the claim.
I'm sorry, Dr. Davis Wilson, just really quick. Because there's a lot of background noise. Because someone put their phone on mute. I mean, everybody should have it on mute except Dr. Davis Wilson. Right at this point, because there's a lot of background noise coming through. Thank you. Sorry, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Absolutely. So further review of the claims found that the Aetna member's husband also had similar billing patterns from all 3 of the doctors. The Special Investigations Unit conducted a follow-up interview. Oh, that looks like a duplicate. Again, just reiterating that she had not met Dr. Denbauer, Dr. Magill, or Ms. McLaughlin, and those were the ones that the invoices were, or the bills were sent into Aetna for. She said that her and her husband did visit Selena at the park every Monday and met with a woman named Jamie who stated that she was a speech therapist working for Dr. Denbauer. She observed another woman walking around the retirement facility recruiting other seniors to join the SMART program. The program consisted of 1-hour meetings once weekly in which the member would be asked questions from a booklet. There were also reevaluations every 2 months, which the member indicates that the visits were the same as usual, but she did not realize that her insurance was being charged for testing that did not occur. The code billed was for neurological testing, which is not consistent with the medical records as the office reported. And the member asked for test results and was told that she did well, but was never given any formal test results, written or verbal. Based on the information found in Aetna's review, they did find that a total of $55,575 was billed under Mental Edge's tax ID number. Only $2,534 of that was paid by Aetna. There were a total of 6 members billed for. Board staff did follow up regarding the status and what actions Aetna intended to take. CA indicated that the provider is outside, already out of network, and recovery is minimal. based on knowledge that the provider is not practicing and filed the bankruptcy, Aetna does not plan to pursue the minimal recovery, but the Aetna has flagged the provider tax ID to review any future claims for payment. On January 31st, 2020, board staff emailed a subpoena to CA for all records related to Aetna's investigation. The complaint notification letter was mailed to Dr. Denbauer. It was requested that Dr. Denbauer submit his response by March 2nd, 2020. Dr. Denbauer failed to respond to that request. The board did also, at a board meeting, mentioned to Mr. Beardsley that they were looking for a status update on that particular complaint. Mr. Beardsley did let the board staff know that at this time they were not retained for that complaint, but that he would pass along the message and determine whether or not they would be or he would be retained for that complaint. On March 16th, board staff mailed and emailed a letter to Dr. Denbauer that indicated that the complaint, this complaint was scheduled for March 15th. They did also notify him that the board had not received written response for the complaint, which was due on March 2nd of 2020. They did also include that if they would like to request to submit waiving the CSE's review of the complaint and opt to send it in for initial review before the board instead, that that could be done by April 7th. And that the request will be presented for the committee for review and consideration on today's meeting. Lastly, the board office had not, until yesterday, received any information and still does not have a letter of representation from Mr. Eves regarding this complaint. As of 4, oh, I have an update, sorry. And they did receive an email after reaching out again to Dr. Denbauer regarding his status of attending the meeting for today. They did receive the request for continuance, as has been noted earlier in the call, and that concludes my summary of this.
Thank you. Is Aetna Representative Initials BB, are you on the phone? And if you are, you're on mute, you take it off mute. I've done that before. Aetna Representative BB, hearing not, hearing none. Dr. Denbauer, you still on the phone?
I am.
All right. Would you like to make, I'm sorry, was this Representative BB, were you on the phone? We can't hear you. We cannot, if Representative BB is on the phone, I heard it's like really faint and going in and out. I heard her say, hold on. Representative BB, are you? I think she was going to try another. Well, let's give it 1 minute. All right, we'll go ahead and go with Dr. Denbauer, and then if she joins us, he or she joins us, then we can maybe do that a little backwards then. All right, Dr. Denbauer, do you have any comments to make?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have multiple comments here. I'm reading the complaint here, obviously, for the first time, and I appreciate the comprehensive review and forward hearing my comments. An issue at hand here is when this billing occurred. So I'm trying to look through the complaint here to see actually when the billing occurred. I think that the board is aware that my company was fraudulently taken over and that the billing was not under my control during a substantial period of time. So I guess I'd perhaps like clarification exactly when this billing occurred. And then in addition to that, I would note that neither Mr. McGill or Dr. McGill or Ms. McLaughlin is under my supervision in any way, and they bill independently of me. And I do not submit their billing, I do not review their billing, nor can I comment on their services are not, they were working under my company's umbrella as independent contractors. So I guess that's not the extent of my comments, but I would probably note that just for clarification purposes.
Thank you. I'm looking for the billing times.
I believe it was in 2018.
In 2018? So during that time,
yes.
Dr. Denbor, you were head?
I had full control of the company at that time.
And at that time, did you then also review all the billing?
I only review my billing. I don't review other providers' billing because they bill as independent contractors.
All right. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
Perhaps an important point of clarification here is that these individuals are not W-2 employees. They're independent contractors that work under our tax ID. And they're obviously also different professions. I do feel like perhaps the individual that did this audit is perhaps confused because she lists my testing as neurological in nature. So perhaps there may be some confusion between the neuropsychological testing that was provided and the neurological testing that apparently Dr. McGill did.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have questions?
I do. My first question is related to, and it was in 2018, that looks like, so just to clarify, the audit was done on the entire practice. The complaints that we're seeing today, because we don't have jurisdiction over the other professions either, is specific to the dates that that were submitted under your billing. And it appears to be that those service dates were also in 2018, but the member is stating that neither her nor her husband, who also had services billed and rendered under his plan, had ever actually met with you. Can you speak to why that would be a finding that would be substantiated by the health plan?
Why it would be substantiated by the health plan? I can't answer that question directly, but perhaps if I could just ask for a point of clarification, perhaps you're asking, so are you asking why would the health plan substantiate that finding?
Let me rephrase. Did you see okay. either one of these patients in person and observe and conduct the assessment in person?
Absolutely. I saw them multiple times. And then I probably saw them three times, and I'd have to look at my documentation, and I actually remember these clients fairly well. They're both from Wisconsin. We talked multiple times because they're from a very similar town where I am from. They're both Packer fans. Very nice people. I met with them, I'm just guessing here, but two or three times. And then we would send testers out, psychometricians, to conduct testing. The testers met with them subsequently. And then our procedure at the time was to send a speech and language therapist, Ms. McLaughlin, out, and she, which is Ms. McLaughlin, and she presumably conducted multiple sessions. I remember the Yavards, signing up for the program, signing the multiple informed consent forms, listening to the presentation that we do. We received approval from the facility. Solano at the Park was a large facility that we were in for about 2 to 3 years. I cannot verify firsthand that Ms. McLaughlin was present at these sessions that she said she was at, but I've known Kelsey for 4 years now, and she's an excellent speech and language therapist. And I have serious doubts that she would bill for sessions that she did not attend. And quite frankly, I have known Dr. McGill for less time, but also have serious doubts that he would bill for sessions that did not occur.
And did you hear anything from Aetna regarding this investigation? Like, did they request to interview you? Did
no.
And at what
I have heard
point,
nothing from Aetna. The first thing I heard of this complaint was from Ms. Michelson.
Okay. Can you remind us of the date or the time frame in which you stopped providing services for Mental Edge?
Probably July of, probably August 1st of 2019.
So
now, additional point? Sorry to interrupt. My NPI and my name was billed subsequently by the company multiple times after that without my knowledge and without my authorization. So I can't say names. So, just Ms. Galvin, may I ask a question real quick?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Dunbar.
Can I use a full name of an individual that's not involved in this particular, not a complaint?
If they're not a patient.
Okay, great. So, Gio Franco, as this board is aware, fraudulently committed a hostile takeover of my company beginning at approximately May of 2019, and we're currently in commercial litigation. My understanding is, and I've seen the claims, some of them, that my MPI and my billing information, as well as Dr. McGill's and also Ms. McLaughlin's and others, are being used in a fraudulent and unauthorized manner.
So in this particular, and I recognize that you have not had a chance to review it, but I'm going to go ahead and,
sure.
and state it anyway so that you have the information. But it looks like the retroactive request for medical records was done in January of 2019 and provided to Aetna by April of 2019. So all of this occurred prior to that May date. And Aetna did submit a letter to the office. Again, I'm not sure who would have been responsible for handling this, but and I don't want to. I recognize questioning specific to that's going to be challenging because you haven't had a chance to review the information. But I do want to note that the concerns beyond May of 2019 are going to be irrelevant on this particular case. Another question that I have.
Understood. Understood. May I make just one additional comment?
Yeah.
I just want to clarify. I personally never received a request for records in this particular matter. My office, it sounds like, did and responded to it. I did not. I just want to point that out.
Okay. And my last question for you, and then I will turn it over to the other committee members. But my last question for you is one that I have asked before, but I'm going to ask it again. Are you currently practicing?
Am I currently practicing psychology?
Correct.
No.
Thank you. Madam Chair, that's all my questions.
Thank you. Dr. Gill, do you have any questions?
Yes, Dr. Dunbar, I realize you may not know the dates of service, but you do say that you saw these people face-to-face. Did you conduct a neuropsychological assessment?
I don't remember if I did it. I typically do the first one, and then the neuropsychometrists do subsequent evaluations. So I'd have to look at the billing in depth. If it's a 96118, then I did it. If it's a 96119, then the neuropsychometrist did it.
You're not sure if you administered testing yourself or whether the psychometrist did so?
Well, I know that I met them multiple times, but if you know, if you're asking me 100%, do I remember if I did the initial testing? I couldn't answer 100% that I did. I believe I did.
Okay, and I believe that you, at least it was reported, and you confirm whether this is so. You reported that you had talked to this individual over the phone, and said that they were. I think there was a general comment that they were doing okay, but you didn't provide a detailed summary of test results and recommendations to this individual. Is that correct?
I would just maybe make a clarification in regards to that. My practice is to provide verbal feedback, and then I ask the patient whether they would want to receive a copy of the report. So in most cases, I call them and I say, hey, I give a very general kind of feedback. I just simply say, hey, I think you're doing quite well. It seems like if there's no decrements that we can see, I basically say, I think you're doing quite well. There's no significant decrements that we can see. And then I ask, do you have any questions? And if they don't have any questions, then I ask, have you received a copy, or would you like to receive a written copy of the report? If they say no, then we don't really proceed forward. It's not my place, and I might humbly suggest, nor do I think it's necessary or recommended for older people to provide a kind of a blow-by-blow report of a 6 or 7 page report. This is not my practice, nor do I feel like it's the standard practice of individuals in the area of geriatric neuropsychology.
So you wouldn't talk about the referral question to them other than to make a general statement?
Well, I would in the case of a standard outpatient evaluation. But in the cases such as this with our Medicare-approved program, what the relationship that we have with Medicare is such that they don't require a referral from a PCP or a neurologist per se. So people aren't getting they're not getting referred to me for any specific problem. It's technically a wellness preventative program, preventative and interventative. So there really is no specific referral question beyond the fact that they have attended a presentation, signed informed consent forms indicating that they can be billed for this service. Then they provided their billing information, and then we've got an authorization from Medicare Part B to bill it. So, in short answer, there's really no specific referral question.
Okay, but you did see them face to face, and you did see them individually.
Well, I've seen them face to face multiple times. Just to provide a bit of context, at the time that we were working, that I was working in the company, we had over 200 or 250 clients. And I remember the Avards, very well, actually. And so I remember all my clients in certain ways that I interact with, but these are people that are actually quite memorable to me. So my guess is that I saw them at least three times, 2 to 3 times.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. I just want to double check if Aetna is on the phone, Aetna representative. All right, not hearing anybody. Thank you, Dr. Denbor, for participating. This is, we're going to now move into deliberations to discuss the issue just amongst the board members. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on this case. You want to start the discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. From my perspective, I have several concerns, and some of it could be resolved from having adequate medical records. However, being that Aetna requested medical records from the practice, and the practice did report that they supplied them with what they had, I think that we've got a substantial amount of information related to the services. I would look to my psychologist colleague as it pertains to the actual CPT code and whether a associate and or the psychologist can bill for those and how that's represented, because that's not a standard of practice for me, so I'm not sure. But I do find that the clinical documentation for those dates of service are lacking, and it appears that Aetna had a very similar finding as well. And I think that I want to hear from the other board members, but I also would entertain the idea of kind of moving this forward with that option, again, that the doctor would have the opportunity to still obtain legal counsel and generate a response for this. I do have concerns related to the correspondence with board staff. I think given the amount of correspondence that the board staff has had with the good doctor over the last couple of years, I'm struggling to understand kind of the lack of responses that has been kind of a consistent pattern, or the delayed responses, and so I'm struggling with that in particular as well. But I'd like to hear, before I entertain a motion, I would like to hear from my colleagues.
This is Dr. Gill. Do we know the coding? The codes will be used in this case?
The coding, I believe, is on the information that we are provided.
Do you know what page that's on?
Page 4 on mine, I believe. If you look at the top of the page, I believe the CPT, is that what we're looking for? Ms. Michelson?
Yes, if Dr. Gill is referring to the CPT codes in Aetna's case overview report, it's mentioned on page 12 to 13 for this particular client.
So according to what I see here, there was neuropsychological testing billed for under CPT code 96119, and then there was a psychological diagnostic evaluation, CPT code 90791.
And then the remaining CPT codes are on the next page, Dr. Gill.
Oh, on the next page, okay. And those are, there was also some 60-minute individual therapies and a 45-minute. And the next page, page 5. I don't see anything on page 5.
It's not 5. I think you said between 12 and 17.
It's between 12 and 13 is what Aetna referenced, the CPT codes, the neuropsych
12,
testing.
12 and 13?
Yes.
And I'm hearing here that what was performed was a wellness assessment, but and we don't know if Dr. Denbar actually administered the testing or was done by the other individual involved here. So I don't know. I think that you've got a diagnostic evaluation, so that would suggest that a diagnosis be rendered or not, as the case may be. And then as far as the testing goes, that would be billed for actual tests that were administered. I guess it's under Dr. Denbar's name, so I guess my question would be, did he administer these tests, because that's part of the complaint here, did he administer these tests for the purpose of wellness? That takes me apart from what neuropsychological testing is. Generally speaking, a neuropsychological testing is to address a referral question, whether it be some form of dementia or incapacity or competence of some form or another. So then I have to wonder, if it's just a wellness assessment, why bother with the neuropsychological testing? Why not just do a simple mental status and let them go from there. Why the testing? Why is that necessary? And it would seem to be under ordinary standards of practice. You know, you have a referral question. You have something you're going to identify or rule out, and then you rule it out in terms of an assessment of a summary of some kind. And it seems to me that if you're just saying you're fine, just doesn't seem to be very robust in terms of a conclusion that's passed. You could certainly do it orally, advise to document that you've done it orally. You can refer them to the test results if they so choose, but it seems to be some clarification of how this operates. I'm a bit taken by it, frankly.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll leave it at that.
All right, thank you, Dr. Gill. I would agree with Dr. Davis-Wilson's comments, and Dr. Gill, I do believe we have a concern with potential violation. Dr. Davis-Wilson, did you have a motion you wanted to make?
I have one I would like to take a stab at. I would motion that we go ahead and move this forward to initial review with the full board under potential violations of 32-2061-15A, obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation, E, gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist, H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client. O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities of psychologists that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. P, falsely or fraudulently claiming to have performed a professional service, charging for a service, or representing a service as the licensee's own when the licensee has either not rendered the service or assumed supervisor responsibility for the service. B, failing to furnish information in the timely manner to the board or its investigators or representatives if requested or subpoenaed by the board or prescribed by this chapter.
Thank you.
And I think those that covered them. There were some under DD, but I felt they kind of overlapped with the overarching sections that were already listed, but that is my motion.
In my notes, Dr. Davis-Wilson, after A, what was the second letter?
Oh, that's fine.
That was
I
it
have
E?
A, E.
That was it. Okay. H, O, P, and then B, B. Is there a second?
Yes.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Dr. Dunbar, you'll be notified by our staff in regards to the next steps for the initial review. Last item on the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I had one question, one last question real quick. As far as, one of the questions that I had, and I probably should have included this in my motion, I apologize. But as far as one of the questions that I asked pertaining to the current status of practice, is it possible for us to direct board staff to resubmit the practice attestation that was provided back after the last time we asked that question for a more current status?
You can. That would be permissible. He did state today on the record that he's not practicing as a psychologist.
So it feels as though he's already stated on the record that we're probably fine with that.
I would agree in many cases. However, it was stated on the record before, and when the board staff followed up, the answer differed. And so we've got it stated on the record again, but the written documentation that we have differs from what's being stated on the record. And so I'm just wondering if we need a current status based on what has already been provided to the board in writing.
This is Dr. Denbor. May I just ask something?
Sure.
I'm not attempting to disagree or cause a confusion, and I'm certainly not a lawyer, Ms. Galvin. But my impression was that the meeting was closed, officially closed. Am I incorrect in that assessment? So there was a motion. Motion was passed, and the meeting was closed.
The meeting is not closed. They have not adjourned. They took a vote on to refer this matter to the full board. The meeting has not adjourned.
Okay. So procedurally, everything that's happening is entirely fine.
Yes, we're good.
Okay, got it. All right. I'm happy to, I would just maybe then add, I'm happy to fill out whatever documentation you'd like to provide.
Okay. I think that what we're hearing from Dr. Davis-Wilson is that she would like a current attestation regarding your current practice of psychology and if you are engaged in psychological care. I think she would appreciate that.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that at all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Now, the last item on the agenda is adjournment. First of all, thank you so much for all the board members for being part of this. I know it's been a long morning, and also staff, and of course, our amazing Jean Galvin, who keeps us in line with the law. So, any motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.